Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Scott Eblin is an executive coach and professional speaker. A former Fortune 500 executive, he's founder and president of The Eblin Group, where he has coached hundreds of senior-level leaders in scores of organizations, including AstraZeneca, Booz Allen Hamilton, Capital One, GE, Johnson & Johnson, and the World Bank. Scott is a graduate of Davidson College and Harvard University and currently serves on the faculty of the Leadership Coaching Certificate Program at Georgetown University. He's author of The Next Level, What Insiders Know About Executive Success. Scott, welcome to Edgewise.
Good morning. I'm really pleased to be here.
Now, in the book, you mentioned that 40% of new executives don't last 18 months. What's at the root of this failure?
There are a lot of reasons for it, but one of the biggest reasons is failure to adopt new habits and break old habits. It's what I describe in The Next Level as picking up and letting go. And when I work with executives, I usually will ask them which is more challenging, the picking up or the letting go. And invariably, people tell me it's the letting go.
Well, why is that?
The picking up often is a cognitive challenge. It's about learning something new. People that have been promoted are generally smart people. They're pretty intelligent and are good at learning new things. Letting go is an emotional challenge.
Right.
That's much more deeply seated.
Mm-hmm.
It's letting go of some of the very things that have made you successful, the things that got you noticed in the first place, that got you promoted. Most of the people that are promoted to more and more senior roles are the go-to people. They're the people who get stuff done. And usually they started out as a subject matter expert in something,
mm-hmm.
as a technical expert in something. And as you move into more and more responsible leadership roles that have broader scopes of responsibility, that go-to person way of operating just doesn't work anymore because there's far too much to do. So one of the pick up and let go distinctions that I talk about in The Next Level is pick up accountability for many results and let go of responsibility for a few results.
Hmm. Right.
Let go of acting as if you're personally responsible for everything that comes out of your shop, because you just can't be. You can't touch everything that happens.
Okay, is that just a matter of empowerment or delegation?
Yeah, you can put systems and processes in place, routines in place, that allow you to be accountable for the results without having to act as if you're personally responsible.
Exactly. You interviewed dozens of leading executives while writing this book. What are some of the common themes of their stories?
One is how challenging it can be to move into these roles. Another is we've got a lot of research from 360-degree surveys that we've run with about 500 to 600 executives over the last 5 years. The lowest rated item out of 72 leadership behaviors we're asking about is paces himself or herself by building in regular breaks from work.
Ooh.
Very closely related to that is regularly takes time to step back to define or redefine what needs to be done. I'm working with a group at a very well-known company. These are 60 newly promoted executives. They've just reached the entry-level executive roles in their company, and it's an orientation program for them. We had them do a self-assessment prior to the session.
Mm-hmm. What were your findings?
The highest self-assessed items were all about personal accountability and being clear about outcomes and objectives. It's a group of people who are really drivers and are known for getting stuff done. The five lowest items were related to pacing themselves or stepping back. Interestingly, one of the low-rated items was acknowledging that they don't pay full presence and attention to people when they're in conversation, because it's the multitasking, got to do five things at once environment that a lot of folks feel like they're in when they move into these leadership roles.
Right.
What they do quite often is more of what they've been doing, which is try to cover it all and do more and more and more and be accountable, when in fact what they really need to do is step back and say, okay, I'm so engrossed in the doing, what really needs to be done.
Right. I'm reminded a little bit of when I worked for a consulting company, and a lot of people at that company talked about reflection, the after you've done the action diagnostic.
Mm-hmm.
One manager was so committed to it. She was trying to get into my head that you have to take a moment at the end, step back and reflect and really ponder what you learned.
Yeah. The Army calls it an after action review. We just had this engagement. And what did we learn from that?
Exactly.
That self-observation.
Right.
That works at a personal and a team level both. You know, the practice of self-observation is key to continuous improvement and learning what you need to either pick up or let go of at the next level.
Mm-hmm.
It's a constant process of fine-tuning and adjustment.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go right to the heart of the matter. What do we need to do? What are the steps that are involved in shifting from the doer mentality to becoming a leader?
One of the questions that I like to have my clients consider is, what is it that only I can do? Given the role that I'm in and all of the unique resources, access, visibility, budget, authority, relationships that come with it, what is it that only I can do?
Mm-hmm.
And that should be a relatively short but high impact list. And it's not a list of things you could do or a list of things you're good at doing. It's the things that only you can do because you're the only vice president or senior director or senior vice president or whatever it is in that role. And certain things come with that.
Absolutely.
The other thing I like to have my clients do is look a year out and get a really clear picture, as clear as you can, of what success looks like, the outcomes that you're trying to create. If you and your team are wildly successful over the next 12 months, and then reverse engineer from that and look first at you as the leader, what's the highest and best use of your time and attention? It goes back to the what is it that only I can do question.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably a 20-80 kind of ratio, the 20% of the things that should be taking up 80% of your time and attention so that you get to that future state a year from now. If you want a different result a year from now, you probably have to do some things differently mm-hmm. starting today. And then take a look at the list of things that you've been spending 80% of your time and attention on. And if you're like most people, there are probably going to be some things on that list which you're so good at doing,
yep.
pretty much everybody would agree you're an expert at it.
So what is the advice there?
Anything that's on that list is a good candidate to delegate to your team because it probably no longer requires your level of expertise.
Hmm.
You weren't always the expert at that. You had to learn how to do it. Somebody way back when gave you some big stretch assignment. The what was very clear. The how wasn't clear at all, and you figured out how to do it. And that's the same opportunity that you have as a leader or an executive with your team members to give them those stretch assignments, and their version of how to do it might be quite different than the way you would do it, but it'll get done, and in the process, they grow and their capabilities increase. And the only way that you can rise up to do the things that only you can do is if they rise up with you and mm-hmm. their capabilities move right along with yours.
Right. Now, you say self-confidence is the dirty little secret of the executive suite. What's behind that?
Here's the scenario. You are the newest member of the executive team, and it's that bi-weekly leadership team meeting.
Okay.
It's that part of the meeting where everybody's giving their 3 and 4 minute reports
mm-hmm.
about what's gone on the last couple of weeks, and they're all sounding pretty wonderful and brilliant. And as it happens, the seating arrangement is such that you're going to be the last person to speak. And here's what's going on in your head. Oh, my gosh, I got nothing.
Right.
I am so not up with these people. They're so much smarter than me. What am I going to do? That little voice inside your head is the itty-bitty committee.
Right.
Everybody's got it. And I think the first thing with self-confidence is if you've been invited to the leadership table, believe that there was a reason that you were. Somebody saw something in you, and usually they expect you to contribute.
And how do you do that?
You don't want to go in your first couple of meetings and say, here's what I think we should be doing with a firm point of view and everybody else is wrong. You've got to learn what's going on, but you can ask questions.
Sure.
You can draw people out. You can summarize what you think you've heard. There's a lot of ways to contribute, even if you don't know immediately what's going on. And if your listeners think about it, they've probably worked for different people over the years, and they've got their favorites that they've worked for and the people that they would hope they never have to work for again.
Oh, yes.
The best boss and the worst boss. And if you think about the characteristics of each and make a little list, I'll bet you on the worst boss list, most of the things that made them the worst boss, you could track back to insecurity. They were people who just didn't believe in themselves or were insecure at some level, and that manifests itself in some very weird and ugly ways. So insecure people make lousy leaders. You've got to believe that you should be there and quiet that little bitty committee in your head.
Mm-hmm, right.
Tell yourself that you've had success in the past, and if you give yourself some space, you'll have success in this role as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, Scott, in a recent blog post, you offered tips on getting stuff done in large organizations. What advice can you give to our listeners to help them focus on important, valuable work rather than the roadblocks?
That post was inspired by a couple of things. One is an article that I read in the Financial Times about a guy at Pfizer who realized he was spending a good part of his day entering data into Excel spreadsheets and tweaking his PowerPoint decks and things like that. It was work that had to be done, but he wasn't the only person that could do it.
And what happened there?
He figured out a way to develop a program they ended up calling Pfizer Works, where they eventually outsourced it to firms probably around the world, and they ended up saving, I think it was 30% of the time and expense of their professionals, and they were able to use that time on more productive, high value added things that only they could do. That was a big step for them, and the way he did it was to run some small experiments. Those experiments were successful, and then they went from there. But I see a lot of people recognizing opportunities in organizations, and there's this learned helplessness they've gotten over the years. They say, well, they would never let us do that, or that could never happen here. They just wouldn't agree with that, or they wouldn't approve. I think the first thing you've got to ask yourself is, who in the heck is they? There's this mythical they out there that won't let us do that. The other thing I see all the time is people give their power away.
Right.
They've got such a strong story about they that they themselves don't realize what they could do. And most often the they is the people in higher positions of authority, the most senior executives.
Yeah.
If you see an opportunity to take advantage of a condition in the marketplace or a condition in the company or solve a problem, most executives are pretty happy if you go to them and say, you know what, I think we've got an opportunity here and I want to run a little beta test to see what we can do with this. It's not going to cost as much money, and here's what I think we're going to get out of it. That person is probably going to say, yeah, go try it.
Mm-hmm.
You run those little experiments, and you keep it small. You don't bring a lot of attention to it, but you gather data that can be extrapolated into the bigger picture. Then you go back to those folks that you originally went to and say, here's what we've got. Can we try a few more? Well, yeah, sure, let's try a few more. Can I get a little bit of budget money for this? Yeah, let's try that.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, you want to start being really intentional about who you're bringing into the process, because it's a change management effort as well. And you want to bring in people that have influence in the organization, that have their own networks, that represent cross-sections of different functions.
Now, you're on record as a champion of peer-to-peer learning. What is it, and why is it especially effective for new executives?
Peer-to-peer learning is identifying a colleague, a peer, and recruiting them to be your peer coach. That doesn't mean they have to be the world's best coach to be your coach, and you don't have to be the world's best coach to be their coach.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to do with this idea of peer-to-peer coaching, which we use a lot in our group coaching programs and in individual client engagements and workshops, is give colleagues the opportunity to listen to themselves think.
Mm-hmm. So what exactly do you mean by that?
I'll give you one example. You've got a big event coming up in the coming week. It might be a presentation, it might be a customer meeting, it might be a conversation with your boss or a tough meeting with your team. In a good peer coaching conversation, I want the peer coach to ask three basic questions.
Right.
First, what's the big event that's coming up next week? Well, I've got this board presentation. Second, if you are wildly successful in that board presentation, what happens? What's the outcome at the end of that? Well, they're going to be thinking this, or they're going to approve that, or they're going to believe this, that, or the other thing, and that's going to lead to such and such. Now, last question, how do you need to show up to make that outcome likely? And most of the time, people are going to respond with, well, I need to say this or say that. And that's fine. The content's important, but you also want them to talk about their body language, their tone of voice, their energy level, their level of confidence that they're projecting, and really get them to visualize that.
Of course.
After talking that out, they come out of it with a much greater sense of confidence, first of all, preparation, second of all, and clarity about what they're going to do and how they're going to do it.
Right.
And all they're doing really is giving each other the opportunity to talk out loud, to listen to themselves think.
Got it.
And it's not so much giving each other advice, although that's okay. It's peer-to-peer. We've been in the same place. I understand what you're going through. Let me give you some space to talk it out and ask some follow-up questions and be fully present for that.
Now, a lot of what we've talked about so far has been the things that you need to work on as an executive or a manager. But what can organizations do to grow their leaders?
They can get them talking with each other. One of the things I see working with rising leaders when they're on their own, struggling with the challenges of taking on bigger roles is they often assume they're the only person that's ever gone through this.
Right.
They're the only person who doesn't get it or hasn't figured it all out yet. And working with groups of leaders and encouraging them to have conversations with each other, the feedback I get most often from them is, wow, I'm so glad they know it wasn't just me. And now I realize everybody has to go through this. There's all kinds of great programs out there to get leaders ready for the next level, succession management programs and talent management programs and executive education.
Right.
But I think being intentional about getting people in conversations about this isn't easy, but you can do it.
Uh-huh.
They can share their experiences with each other, learn from each other, and take heart from the fact that they're not on this journey alone.
We've been speaking to Scott Eblen, author of The Next Level, What Insiders Know About Executive Success. You can follow his leadership blog at www.scotteblen.com. Scott, thanks so much for being with us on Edgewise today.
You're welcome. I really appreciate the opportunity.
AMA webcasts bring you 60 minutes of thought-provoking insight, specific answers to your management challenges, and conversations with renowned thought leaders. Best of all, they're all free. For a complete schedule of upcoming webcasts, visit the events calendar at amanet.org/events. We'd love to get your feedback on today's program. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.